Last time, we began talking about Fibonacci numbers. And you recall that after I finished talking about the story, we realized that there was a pattern. And so on. And the rule is that given the first two numbers, we can generate all previous numbers by adding the two previous numbers. And I'd ask you to think about how you might create an algorithm in order to be able to follow to create the program that will print all Fibonacci numbers less than 1,000. And remember, the very last thing we talked about was that you need to start with two numbers. Okay, at the very least, you have to start with two numbers here, because that's the rule. The rule is we take the last two numbers, so I've got to give you those two numbers. So if I call the last number, that is 1, I'm going to be starting by giving you these two. If I call that last, and I call the one before that next last, I have two variables. Okay? These are the Martian bubbles that we've had before. And clearly I can do this easily by, that's the starting, that's where I need to start. So if I was going to write a flowchart, the flowchart would begin by saying, of course, start. And the first thing that I did was I assigned to next last, next latest, what did I call it over there? Next last, assign to it the value 0, and assign to the variable last the value 1. That's how we started. Now, what do we need to do next? If you are now going to see to generate the next number, what would you do?
Add those two,
yes. But before we add those two and get the next number, we probably should print something first, right? In other words, we're going to add 0 and 1 to get a 2. Don't we want to first print something before we go on any further? The 0 and the 1, right? Because we're not going to get back to those again, okay? So let's print. Let's print those two values. Okay, so that will start it off. That'll print the two numbers. This is sort of a special case because we're starting with those two. We're printing them. Then we're going to go on to generate the new ones from that point on. So I'm simply going to, at this point, print. Okay, I'm now going to print the next. Okay, and the next last and the last. So we printed out 0 and 1. And now, of course, comes the next step. And what's the next step? Add them together to get the sum. So we need one more variable. And we're going to add 0 and 1 to get 1. Okay? So let's write that on our flowchart. Sum is assigned the value of next last plus last. Okay. What do we want to do now? What do we want to do now? We've just calculated the number 1. Yeah. Very good. You want to start going for the next set of numbers, which is an excellent idea, thing to do. But before we go to the next ones, what else do we want to do first? How are we ever going to know if we're finished? How are we going to know? Remember, we want to create, it's not an infinite process. We want to stop when what happens? What was the assignment? No, that's not the assignment. The assignment said to print all Fibonacci numbers that are less than 1,000. So what do we want to check? Did we get to 1,000 yet? Because we're going to do this over and over again, you realize, right? We're going to do this over and over again each time. Before going on, let's start our loop. Exactly. We're going to make a decision. We're going to check, to see whether or not we've already finished. Of course we haven't finished yet, But we're going to check to see if the sum is less than or equal to 1,000. Okay? If that's true, we want to continue and do what you told me to do, which I'm going to go through in a moment. Go on to the next number. But if it's not true, then what do we want to do? Stop. If it's not true. If the sum is not less than or equal to 1,000, it means we're finished. So if this is false, I'm going to stop. If it's true, we want to now do what? Continue the process. Well, the first thing to do before we continue the process is to print out the thing we just calculated, because that's the next number. So let's print out the sum. So at this point, we've printed out the one, the second one. Okay? Actually, I made one little mistake here, because this will make me print one twice. This doesn't belong here. Okay? Let's go through this again. We make next last zero, last is one. We print out the zero. We say sum equals next last plus last. So sum is now one. Zero plus one is one. We ask, is that less than or equal to 1,000? Yes. So we print out the sum. So we print out the one. That's the second one that I circled there. Now we need to do what? To generate the next number. Well, how do we do that? Let's take a look at this picture. If I now put this number here and this number here, then I add these two again and I get this number. Let's do that again. Put this number here, put this number here in this variable, and then add again and get 3. One more time. Put this number here. Notice we demote each number. This number goes here. This number goes here. Add them and get 5. Does anyone see the process? Each time the last number becomes the next last, and the sum becomes the last. So how do I say, put this number here? What statement would I say? How do I make the next last what the last used to be? Precisely. Next, sometimes the obvious answer is the right answer. Next last should be assigned the value of last, followed by... next statement. Let's look at the board. I made the last into the next last. Then I wanted to make the sum to the last. So how do I do that? Same statement. What statement would it be? Sum equals last. Assign the value of last. And then I go back to see. Oops, not there. Then I add that, go back to here to get a new sum. And check to see if I'm finished. If I'm not finished, I repeat this process again. I print it out, demote them, add them together. Print, see if I'm finished. Print it. Eventually, the sum will become more than 1,000, and we'll stop. Yes? It does, but who needs it anymore? Who cares? In other words, each time I do this, the thing that's there before is no longer needed. Once I print it out, and I go to the next generation of rabbits, I don't need to know the past. I only need these three numbers. Someone see that? And so convince yourself by going through this algorithm at home, through that flowchart, that indeed will print out. You don't have to go always up to 1,000, obviously, but at least do the first 5 or 10 to make sure that this really does print out those values. Now, before we go on, actually turn this into a program, 2 comments. First of all, look at how we write less than or equal. We use this symbol. Okay? So the symbols for comparison, what we call relational operators, just as we've had arithmetic operators, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, we have relational operators. And they are less than greater than, less than or equal, greater than or equal, not equal, and now we introduce how one says something is equal. Okay, remember, we can't use this symbol, because that doesn't mean equal. What does that mean? What does that mean? Doesn't mean that they're equal. What does that mean? Come on, folks, what does this mean? Yeah, that's this. Move it from the right to the left. What's that called? The assignment operator. The assignment operator. Okay, that's equality. If you say X equals Y, you're stating a fact. True or false. Okay, that's either true or false. That doesn't say put something into something else. So don't mix up this one with this one. Two very, very different things. Yeah? So these are what we call the relational operators. And they are on your chart, your hierarchy chart in the book. You'll see where they appear in relationship to the other operators. And so you'll know which goes first and which goes last. Okay. Next. Let's take this now and turn this into a program. So you have the flowchart and you have the handout. If you will look for the Fibonacci program, let's follow it through. So we have a normal comment. We include our normal things, use namespace standard. I don't need these things in here, so let's get rid of them. We needed three variables, which I called on the board next, last, and sum. And here I chose to call them next, latest, and sum. Okay, so I used slightly different words. What was the first thing our flowchart did? It made next assigned a value of 0 and last of 1. And so I did that right over here. Okay. And the next thing that I did on that flowchart was to print them out. So, there's the line, printing it out. And of course you see that I printed out latest, and I also put a blank afterwards so that the next number doesn't go right up against it. Right? We need to separate the numbers by at least one blank, otherwise they'll be very hard to read. I want them all on one line, so I didn't put an end line. If you want each one on a separate line, you put an end line. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, that's a mistake. Cross that line out, that's from an old version, and copy this in its place. Cross that line out. Printf is part of the C language, not part of C++. It's from an old version of this program. Okay? Next, on the flowchart, the next thing was sum, calculate the sum, which I did over here. And remember, the loop begins here. The loop always starts at the decision. The loop says, while the sum is less than or equal to 1,000, continue the loop. While the sum is less, this is the body of the loop. So while the sum is less than or equal to 1,000, continue. And that's what we have here. While sum is less than or equal to 1,000, next on the statement is print out the sum. Print that, then do next equals last and latest equals sum. Come back around again and say sum equals latest plus next, and then hit the end of the while, so we come back to here. And we'll do that over and over and over again. When that becomes false, we want to drop out of the loop, and we're done. Okay? So if I compile this, and then I run it, it prints out all the Fibonacci numbers that are less than or equal to 1,000. What would we do if we wanted to see all the Fibonacci numbers less than or equal to 10,000? What would I change in this program? The loop. Instead of while less than 1,000, while less than 10,000. I wanted 100,000. Let's put 100,000 in there. Recompile. Run it. Pretty fast. Fibonacci numbers get big very quickly. You notice there aren't that many numbers, because each time, as they get bigger and bigger, the next one becomes even bigger. Okay? Please make sure you see the connection between those two. First you go home and you do that, then you make sure that you see the connection between the flowchart and the program. Yes? Because they're not equals equals. We're not saying, they're not saying a fact. We're telling you to do something. We're telling you to take the next last. We're telling you to take the last and put it into the sum. You'd use that in a while statement. If you wanted to say, you want to do a loop while something is equal to something else. We'll use that later, and as we'll see, in an if statement. If something is equal to something else, do something. Okay, when you want to say a fact, something is equal, and the result is true or false, you would use equal, equal. We don't want a result of true or false here, we want a result of a number. We want to put something into the sum. So that's what you ask yourself. If you say, if it's something that's a decision, true or false, that's equals, equals. If it's something to do, an arithmetic statement, then it's going to be assignment. Now let me ask you a question. What would happen if I reverse these two statements? If I did this first, and then I did next last equals last. If I reverse them. Would that work? If I reverse those two statements. What do you think? You think it would not work. And you think it would work, and everyone else has no idea. Okay. Well, the best way to figure this out is to trace the program. It's a very important skill in programming, is to be able to follow line by line and see what happens. Not what we want to happen, because sometimes what we want and what we get are two very different things in life. Okay? We got to trace it down. So let's start this from the very beginning that way and see what happens. And we might have to go through it a few times before we're convinced one way or the other. So let's see. The first thing it says, how do you trace a program? First thing it says, next last equals zero. I'll put a zero here. Then it says, last equals one. Then that. Then it says to print the next last. So next last is zero, so I'm going to print it. That's called printing. Okay. Next statement, what does it say? Sum equals next last plus last. So 0 plus 1, and put that into here. So far, so good. Next statement. Sum less than or equal to 1,000. True or false? True. So it says to print out the sum. So I take the sum, and I print it out. Next statement. Sum equals last. That takes this number. Not sum equals last. It says, yes, sum equals, that's not what I had. I wrote that backwards, didn't I? That wasn't sum equals last. That should have been last equals sum. Even the first time around is what it should have been. All right? We wrote it backwards there. Okay? In other words, what I'm reversing is these two statements. I never said sum equals. So I'm doing this one first before this. So sum equal should be given the value, sum last should be given the value of sum. Put this number here. Okay, whatever was here before, now this is what's here. And the next statement in our revised program is next last equals last. To take what's in here and put it into here. Right? Is everyone with me? That's how I'm tracing the program. And then the next step, follow the arrow, is sum equals next last plus last. That gives me a 2. And now I'm in a decision. Is that less than or equal to 1,000? So the next thing it says to do is to print it. So let's print it. So far, it looks like it works. So the next statement is last equals sum. To take this number and put it here. And the next statement says to make next last equals last. That puts this here. And now we're going to go wrong. Because when we now say sum equals last plus next last, we're going to get 4 instead of what we should have gotten. Okay? So the order here does make a very important difference, but you need to trace it through far enough to show where it goes wrong. Bear with me? Any questions? Now I want to revise this program in a way that you don't have it in your handout. So you might want to take notes. Suppose I had... this program doesn't do very much. The whole main simply calculates Fibonacci numbers. But suppose I had a program that did many, 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 many different things. One of the things that it did, that it needed to do, was to calculate the Fibonacci numbers. In this case, as you can see, the only thing the program does, the whole purpose of this program, was to print the Fibonacci numbers. Suppose there was a main program that did 10 things, and one of the things it did was this. In that case, instead of making this the main, I would want to create a function, just like we call prompt user, and have the main call that function instead. In other words, instead of this being the main, and let's change things here, I'm going to call this Fibonacci, new function, okay? And when it's done, I'm not going to want to pause. I'm going to want to return to the main. Whoops. Okay? Return to the main. Semicolon. Okay? Now, one other thing. If it's returning, what do I need to do over here? This can't be an int. We're not returning a number. So what do we have to change that to? What do your prompt user do when it's finished? What was the type of prompt user? Void. If you don't return a value, so you're not an int, you're returning nothing. So this has to change to void. Okay. So we have a little function. Now, this function will compile, if I didn't make any mistakes, okay? And there are no syntax error, except it says... gives me a weird error here, which I'll explain in a moment. There's no main. And if there's no main, nothing's going to happen. Remember, we need to have a main. We've written a Fibonacci function now. We need a main. So let's create a main. Very simple. We'll put a main down here, just as we had before. Int main, open close, brace. Let's at the very end say system. Let's fill that stuff in. System. Ugh. Semicolon. Return 0. This would help if I could type. Okay. That's the end of the main. And I see that I misspelled int. Okay. Now what's the main going to do? It's going to call that function. Right? So what was the function called? It was called Fibonacci. Let me indent that properly so it's easy to read. So, we have our function Fibonacci. We have a main that's going to call upon Fibonacci to do its thing. There's only one thing I left out. Who can see what I left out? One thing. When you have a function, what else do you need? A function prototype, right? So we need to have a function prototype. So let's put it up here. And that's going to be simply void. Oops. Void Fibonacci open. Void. Okay. Correct? Does everyone see what we've done so far? So let's think this through. I have a main. The main has a declaration. It says there's going to be a function called Fibonacci that we're going to use. The main simply calls the Fibonacci function. And then when that's done, the main finishes. I go back... when I hit this statement, okay, it will now do this. And if this works, which I hope it does, let's build it, and let's run it. It should do exactly the same as before. Now, of course, I have the main do other things as well. I now have a Fibonacci function that you can add to your library and use whenever you want to. Any main can now call this function. You see how I rewrote the structure of the whole program. I've made a boss. Instead of making Fibonacci the boss is the main. And the main, the executive, now calls the Fibonacci to do its thing. Any questions? No, top or bottom you mean? No, the order of the functions is irrelevant because the compiler looks at each of them separately and then later it builds them and puts them together. Some people like to put the main first and all the functions afterwards. Some people like to put all their functions first and then the main. That's a matter of personal style, but you should be consistent. You shouldn't put functions, main, functions, because then no one can find the main. The main has to be either the first one or the bottom. It's either called top-down design or bottoms-up design. Who's the top? The boss is first, and then all the workers, or all the workers are defined first, and the boss comes along and says, you do, you do, you do, you do. It's really a matter of your style. Now, let's go back to the question we had before. Let's say now I wanted to run this program for all Fibonacci's numbers less than a million. What would I do? Type in a million, right? But that means you'd have to know something about programming. Wouldn't it be better if I asked you to put in a number, and then whatever number you gave me, I use that number in its place? Doesn't that make a more general sense? Instead of having to constantly change the number in here, assuming you knew code blocks and knew how to program, how to compile it, if you wanted to make this a practical program, you would want it to ask the question, what number is your limit? And then use that number, right? Does that make sense? So let's do that. Let's have the main program, before it calls Fibonacci, do the following two simple things. C out, enter the upper limit, and what should I follow this statement by? Very good. A C in, and what would you like me to call this, what I'm reading the number into? Pick a word. Enter the upper limit. What would you, Limit. Good choice. Okay. Now that I've created a new variable called limit, what had I better do first? Very good. What should it be? What is limit? A float, an int, a void. What is limit? Float? Are these numbers with decimal points? Fibonacci numbers are not decimal numbers. So let's make them ints. By definition, there's no such thing as a Fibonacci number with decimal points. They're all integers. So I'm just simply going to call them int. Very good. What should I do next in my program? Instead of saying, while sum is less than or equal to whatever it is, 10 million here, you now want me to say, while sum is less than what? Limit. Good. Everybody with me? Almost correct. What is going to be the problem? Does anyone guess at a problem that's going to arise now? In fact, you might guess it the minute I compile it. You might see your error. We don't know what the limit is. Because limit exists in the main, but it doesn't exist in the Fibonacci function. Remember, it's a local variable. It's a local variable. How do I tell the main is going to ask you for the limit? How is the main going to communicate that with the function? I could make it a global variable, but I don't like to do that. Let's pause for a moment. We'll get back to this. And remember that when we were using such things as square root, we said something like SQRT, and then in parentheses we provided a number like 100. Remember, this is the name of the function, and this is called the argument of the function. In other words, like in algebra, we're sending the 100 to the function. What I'd like to do is something similar here. I would like that when I call upon Fibonacci, instead of simply saying, do your thing, I want to send it whatever value you put in for limit. And we do it this way. Now I'm going to put into the parentheses the word limit. That is, I'm calling the Fibonacci and I'm sending it an argument. Whatever number you happen to choose. Okay? Everybody with me? But look here. This prototype said that there's going to be nothing in the parentheses. It's going to be a void. And I've just put something into those parentheses. What have I put into those parentheses? Limit, which is an... So I'm going to have to change the function prototype to match. It's now going to have to be an int. What does that prototype say? It says that when you call the Fibonacci function now, it will expect to receive an argument, which is an integer. So far, so good? But now, this no longer matches this line. Because this line says, void Fibonacci, nothing. So I gotta change that line. And this line is gonna say int, and I'm gonna use the word limit here. Think of it this way. The word limit here is called a parameter. The word limit here is called an argument. Think of it as a pitcher throwing a value to the catcher. The pitcher is the argument, sending a value to the parameter, which is accepting the limit. They can even have different names. They don't have to have the same name. I call this limit here, but just to be different, okay, I'm going to just change this and make this the letter N here. While sum is less than or equal to N, just to be different, and I'm going to change this to be N over here. Okay? Let's think what happens. You are going, in the main, to provide me with a limit. You're going to say 5,000. I'm going to call the function, I'm going to take the 5,000, and send it over to the Fibonacci function, which is going to catch that 5,000 and put it into the variable n. The argument goes to the parameter. Does everyone see that? No global variables. I don't need them. Okay? Let's make this sure that this thing works. And then we'll go through it again. So it compiled it. And now let's run it. Enter the upper limit. Give me a number. 15,000. Okay, 15,000. Hit enter. That's exactly what it, same thing it did before. But let's follow it through now. Okay, let's trace it. First thing that happened was, we came and we hit this statement, which printed, enter the upper limit. You provided me with the number 15,000. That number was put into the variable called limit. Here. Now that limit has the number 15,000, I now call the Fibonacci function with the argument 15,000. Fibonacci now, this is the function invocation. We're now calling the function. We're not only calling the function, we're also sending it over a number to go with it. We're sending it over 15,000. The 15,000 hits this function here and gets put into the n, because that's what matches. The limit matched with the n. The argument to the parameter. Argument to the parameter. N is now 15,000. Now I enter the program. While sum is less than 15,000, we do this. This way I can now run this program. Let me just close this window. And I can now run it again. And this time put in a different number. Let's put in 35,000. Let's put in 350,000. I don't care. It'll work. Now it'll work for any number you put in. Functions and parameters. Now we're going to spend a lot of time later on the semester looking at this. This is your first introduction, making functions a little bit more powerful than there have been before. Before, a function just did something, and you really couldn't send it anything. You just did it. Now, we can actually not only call a function, but send a value. Let's now just look at again the rules of using this, because they're really no different. First of all, we start off with the function header. It's still void, because it's returning nothing. Fibonacci, but now in parentheses, we create the parameter, int n, just as before. Then we have a function prototype. Now look at the function prototype. It's very similar to the header. What's the difference between the function prototype and the header? Let me see if I can bring them both on the screen at the same time. Let's get this a little smaller. There. Top line, compare this line with this line. That line with this line. It's the only difference between the header and the prototype. The header does not have a semicolon at the end of it, while the function prototype does. And the header has the actual name of the parameter in there, int n, while the prototype just says int. It doesn't care about whether you call it n or limit, call whatever you want, x, y, z, limit, greater limit, biggest number, it doesn't care. Okay? Well, there is now how we can send values. Now, of course, this sends only one value. Later on, we'll learn how to send more than one value. But this is the beginning of using arguments. Which is the argument? Which is the argument? Exactly. The one in the function invocation. The one that you send. Okay? It's the pitcher. And the parameter is the one that is in the function header, the one that's accepting. They could have the same name, or they don't have to have the same name, as you can see here. Even if they had the same name, there's still two different variables. They might as well have different names, because they're two different variables. When we talk about local variables, even if they have the same name, they're still different variables. But one is it's like having a tag race. One person is carrying the number 15,000, taking it and putting it into the other box, to the other variable. Everybody with me? Yeah. That you're going to be accepting an integer. The returning is still returning nothing. Let's look at the prototype. There it is. The prototype, the return is still void. There's still nothing being sent back. If you look at the return statement, this return statement. See, here returns zero, so that has to have an int. This returns nothing, therefore it has a void. Okay? The thing in the parentheses, what you're referring to, that tells me they have to match, the argument has to match the prototype. You can't send a float to an int. They have to match. And they do, they're both ints. Everybody with me? Any questions? Yes. Because they're both telling us the same thing. The invocation is calling the function, the prototype is describing the function, and the header is creating the function. They're like a cookie cutter. They all better be the same thing. They're just technically in the prototype, we don't stick in the name n or limit, because that could be anything you choose. In the function header, we have to decide what we want to call our prototype, our parameter. We call it n here, or limit, or whatever you want to call it. Everybody with me? Now it's a much more general purpose program than before. Before, you had to make up your mind what number you wanted it, unless you were a programmer, you have to go in and change it. But the average person in the street who's not a programmer wouldn't be able to use the program. Now you've made it in such a way that anyone can use it. Notice the main takes on the responsibility of asking for the values, because that's really not part of doing the actual Fibonacci. Once the main establishes what value you want the limit, it calls the Fibonacci function, sends it the limit that you've chosen, and goes on its way. Okay? Who walked in late and didn't get back things while we're at it? David? This is your regular. Okay? You get one of these. Wait, don't go away. And you get one of these. And you get one of these. And you get one of these. And this is just reading material. Okay. So before we go on to the next program, let's look at the homework assignment that is due 2 weeks from today. Let's first go over the high school algebra that this should remind you of. You, of course, recall that an equation of the form ax squared plus bx plus c equals 0 has, depending on what the coefficients a, b, and c, can have two solutions. X could be two numbers, x could be one number, or there could be no solution to the equation. In general, the solution of a quadratic equation is always of the form x equals minus b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac over 2a. And if there are a real square root, not a negative number, then you end up with two values. If the square root sign becomes negative, then we have only imaginary solutions or no real solutions. Okay? So what I would like you to do is to write a program that plugs in different numbers for A, B, and C, and then prints out the results for X, one solution, two solutions, and three solutions, and checks, then goes back and checks to see whether or not the number is correct. And how do you check it out when you do it by hand? You take your solution and you plug it back into the ax squared plus bx plus c, and it should be equal to 0. Now, this, it does say it should be very, very close to 0, because due to round-off errors, like in the calculator, it may not be exactly 0, maybe 0.00001, so you're going to accept that as a correct solution. Now, how are we going to do this? So, the first thing is you're going to prepare a data file. This is the first program that requires you not to take the input from the keyboard, but to create a data file, just as you have instructions for doing that. And in that data file, you look in the back sheet, you're going to have a whole bunch of numbers there, a whole bunch of sets of numbers. In addition, you're going to make six additional sets, so that you'll have, I think, 15 altogether. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, 15 sets altogether. Okay, so let's look at the algorithm. Step one, you will read in A, B, and C. You know how to do that, right? C in. Then you're going to print it out looking nicely of the form AX squared plus BX plus C equals 0. So you will print out, for example, you look at the back sheet, I give you a sample output. If the numbers are 1, 1, minus 2, I want you to print out A equals 1, B equals 1, C equals minus 2, and then I want you to print out 1x squared plus 1x plus minus 2. And since you can't write a square, you'll simply write 1x, and then you'll use a little the caret 2, that you'll do in your cout statement. So that's just a matter of formatting it so it looks pretty. No calculations have been done yet. Step three, you're going to check to see if A happens to be 0. Now, if A happens to be 0, what does that mean? Look at the quadratic equation. If an A is 0, it means A is not a quadratic equation because there's no x squared term. It just means it's bx plus c, which means it's a linear term equation. Okay? And actually, it's not even that, because when bx is 0 also, if x is 0, I'm sorry, bx equals c equals 0. But in any event, if you put a 0 into the denominator of the quadratic equation, you get an infinite, you get no solution. So the first thing you're going to do is say, if the value of a is 0, you're going to print a message, invalid data, and move on to the next set of data. Now, one of the things we're going to want to know is keep track of how many invalid sets of data there were. And so you'll have a counter. Remember we talked about counters the other day? Counter equals counter plus 1. So at this point, if A equals 0. Let's stop for a moment and talk about how we know if something is equal to 0. How could we check that? I think we've introduced this statement once before. Let's review it. Anyone remember what statement does one use to decide if something is happening? If. Because I use the word if. Exactly. You would say, if A equals 0, Remember, that's now we're using equality. If A equals equal, what do you want to do? A bunch of things. C out. You want to print some message. Invalid data. You want to invalid counter. Okay, plus plus. James wanted invalid counter. And then go on in the situation where it's not equals to zero. So there we see an if statement. If statements have the form if a condition, very much like the while, except it doesn't do it over and over and over again, it does it once. If it's true, it'll do the statement in the braces. If it's not true, it'll skip it. We'll look more about if statements as a whole topic into itself, but you can start reading about it in the book. Next, step four. Next, you're going to want to find out if b squared minus 4ac is less than 0. Why do you want to check to see if that's true? Imaginary, exactly. So you'll have another if statement. What's the next if statement going to say? If what? If b times b minus 4 times a times c is less than 0, c out, something like imaginary, and then a different counter, imaginary counter, plus plus. See how we're checking? One at a time. Now, all other possibilities are valid. So therefore, you're now going to have a new counter called valid, and say valid plus plus, because we're counting how many valids there are and how many invalids. Next, statement six. If C equals equals 0, then again, we'll print the message C out. There is no last term. And you'll have a counter called C counter, or C zero counter, plus plus. A lot of counters here. Next, number seven. We now are going to compute X. We'll have the quadratic equation. You have to have it twice, right? You have to have x1 equals minus b plus the square root of b squared minus 4ac over 2a, and x2 equals minus b minus the square root of b squared. Remember, a variable can only hold one value at a time, so we need two x's, one x1, one called x2. Everybody with me? Step 8. You will compare x1 and x2. If they are both the same, what does that mean? There's only one solution. And we want to know how many times that happens. So I have another counter. If x1 is equal to negative x2, what does that mean if x1 is equal to negative x2? Who remembers that from your algebra? Remember your algebra? An equation like x squared minus 4 equals 0. What are the solutions of that equation? X equals plus or minus 2, because the middle term drops out. So that's the situation. It's a perfect square. Okay, it's a difference of perfect squares. So therefore, compare x1 and x2. If x1 equals x minus x2, print the message that there is no middle term. It will be that case. Count how many times that happens. Now, if x1 is not equal to negative x2, then there are two different solutions. I want you to print them out and count how many times that happens. Then, now that you've found the solution, you're going to check by doing what? Putting them back into the equation and showing that y should be very close to 0. And then you're going to have a loop that's going to go back and get the next set of numbers and do that all over again. And the next set of numbers, do that all over again. And the next set of numbers. And how are you going to know when to stop? When you get to a control Z. And then when that happens, you're going to print out the summary. Total number of data sets, number of valid data sets, number of invalid sets, blah, 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 blah. So a sample solution might be, I showed you several sample solutions. A is 1 and B is 1 and C is minus 2. You get 1x squared plus 1x plus minus 2. Valid data set. X values are minus 2 and 1. When x is minus 2, formula 0.0. When x is 1, formula 0.0. Then you go on to the next set. When you get the numbers 0, 1, and 3, you print that A equals 0, B equals 1, C equals 3. 0x squared plus 1x plus 3. A is 0, data is invalid. And just go on and get the next one. And so on and so forth. Now, there are two ways you can write this program. One is you can write one giant main that does everything. Or you can think about breaking it up into pieces. That would get you extra credit if you used functions. Okay? So think of this thing through. Okay, I think you know enough to do this. And let me just get back to the if statements. Okay? There are two ways we can write an if statement. And you have to decide which of these forms you're going to use, depending on the situation. Again, we'll talk more about this in the future, but I want you to think. I can say something like, if something, do this, followed by if something, do that, and then go on and do stuff. If this is true, it'll do this. If this is true, it'll do this, and then it'll do this. In both cases, it'll always do this. If this is false, it won't do this. If this is false, it won't do this, but it will do this. Does everyone see that? It's the logic. Just like in English. If it's true, go on. If it's true, each of these are independent statements. But there's a third form. There's another form, rather. Second form. Else if. Like in English, what do you think that means? If this is true, do this. And don't even look at this. Else, don't do this. Okay? And then go on to the rest. If this is false, only then do you check to see if this is true. But if this is true, it's never even going to look at this. See the difference? Okay? So I want you to read a little bit about if statements and else if statements. We'll cover it in class later on. But you need to start reading and looking at how these statements work. Let's move on now to another program. Okay, here's the situation. I give you a bunch of numbers. 5, 3, 2, minus 1. We give you only positive integers, so we can use minus 1 to tell us when there are no more grades, when there are no more numbers. And what I want you to do, you don't know ahead of time how many numbers there are, what I want you to do is to calculate the factorial for each of those numbers. Now everyone knows what factorial is. 5 factorial means 5, symbols, exclamation point, 5, times 4, times 3, times 2, times 1. 2 factorial is 2 times 1. And of course, 1 factorial is what? What's 1 factorial? 1. And what's 0 factorial by definition? Anyone remember? Never learned this? 0 factorial is 1 by definition. It's also equal to 1. And I can prove it to you. Okay, it's not just someone's making this up. If someone says 4 factorial over 4 factorial, okay, that has to be equal to 1, right? Because 4 times 3 times 2 times 1 over 4 times 3 times 2 times 1. Well, actually, I can't prove it to you so easily right now. Forget about the proof. Let's just leave it as a fact for now. Now I realize the proof is a little more complicated. In any event, 0 factorial is 1. You might want to on your own look it up on Wikipedia and find out why 0 factorial is 1. There's no such thing as a negative factorial. So that's what we want to do. We want to calculate factorials. Everyone understand the problem? Now, I could break this, when I look at something like this, instead of focusing on how to calculate all the factorials, if I can figure out how to do one factorial, then I just put the whole thing in a loop and just do it over and over again. Right? So I'm going to have a loop. We know already we're going to have a loop that's going to say something like this. There's going to be a loop. There's just the outlines of a loop now. That's going to say C in N while N is greater than or equal to zero, calculate N factorial, and then get the next one. C in N, come back around again. This is what we call a standard read loop. And you've seen this many times in all of our programs so far. Just put it down below so it's obvious. We read in the first value. We check to see if it's time to stop. If not, we go into the loop and do whatever we have to do in here. After doing all that stuff, get the next number and come back around. This is the basic form of a read loop. You read data and process it until there's no more. So all I need to solve this problem is to figure out how to do this. And if I can figure out how to do this, I just stick it in here, and then I'll solve the whole problem. Does everyone see that? So whenever you have a big problem with many values, like the assignment I just gave you, you do it for one set, then you put that whole thing inside a big while loop, and you solve your problem. You just did that with your homework that I just returned to you. Right? You figured out how to calculate one set of distance and velocity, and then you just put the thing in a while loop. You read in the time, while the time was greater than or equal to zero, calculate the velocity and the distance, read the next time. Round and round and round you go. So I now can put my focus off this and go to that board and see if we can figure out how to tell the Martian to calculate factorial. So, of course, the Martian, of course, has a variable called n, and I put a number, let's say, 5 in here. Any ideas of how to do this now? What would you tell the Martian to do? Ah, very good. Start at 1. So I need another variable. Should I call the variable I for now? Because you just didn't give me a name, so I'll just call it I. I'll put a 1 in there. Good. And what should I do next? I have to get a... up to 5, right. So you just said a whole mouthful, and you got to break that down into statements. So first of all, you said I have to multiply, which means that I need to store away the what? The product. Excellent. So I need another variable called product. And what should I start the product off at the beginning? Should I start off at 0 like I start off sums? 1. If I started off at 0, it's always going to be 0. Right? Multiplication, you got to start off at 1. So I'm going to put a 1 in there. Very good. And then I think what you're telling me to do is to say product should be equal to product times I, which means 1 times 1 is 1. And then what do you want me to do? What should I do to this? Here's my counter. What should I do to this? What do you want me to do to this next? Add 1 to it. I plus plus, right? Because that's going to put a 2 into here. And then you're going to tell me to do this again. Correct? Which is going to put 2 times 1 is 2. Then you're going to say, do this again, which makes this into a 3, my counter. And do this again. Product equals product times I. Correct? And so that's going to be 3 times 2 is 6. And then you can say I plus I again, which is 4. And then you're going to say product of product times I. 4 times 6 is 24. And then you're going to say I plus I is now going to be 5. And you're going to say product equals product times I, 5 times 24 is 120, correct? And then you're going to say I plus plus again, which is 6. And you're going to say, stop. We're done. Because we got more than 5. Right? So let's write that in a loop that we've done many times already. We started out with I equals 1. While I is less than or equal to n, product is assigned the value of product times I plus plus, and we're done. There it is. Let's see. Let's verify that this works. Okay? Now, of course, I'm assuming, obviously, I actually shouldn't assume anything. Of course, I have to also say product equals 0, equals 1, right, to start it off. Isn't that what I just did? Let's verify that works. Let's see what we have. I'm going to erase all this. We have now 3 variables, I see. N, we have I, and we have product. Now, N you're going to supply me with. So what do you want to fill? Let's pick a number. What do we want to do factorial of? Huh? 7. You want 7. So I'll say it'll take me like 20 minutes to do that arithmetic. How about 4? How about 6? Okay, we'll split the difference. 6. So N is 6. That's where we start. You're giving that. You're giving that. Okay, next. Put our finger on it and trace. Important skill. Product equals 1. Done. I equals 1. Done. While I is less than N, is it? It is. Product should be equal to product times I. I plus plus. While I is less than or equal to N, is it? Yes, it is. Right? I is less than or equal to N. Product equals product times I makes this 2. I plus plus makes this 3. While I is less than or equal to N, is it? Yes. Product equals product times I makes this into a 6. Makes this into a what? Into a 4. Come around. Is this less than or equal to this? Yes, it is. So product equals product times I makes this into a 24. I plus plus makes this into a 5. Is this true? Is I less than or equal to N? Yes. Okay. So product times I, 5 times 24 is 120. I plus I is 6. While I is less than or equal to N, true or false? True. Product equals product times this, which is what? 720, right? I plus plus makes this into a 7. Come around the loop. True or false? So we stop. Does it work? Easy. Okay. So this is something that we've seen before. So remember that products have to now be started off at 1, not at 0, or otherwise be 0. Now let's look at this loop for a moment. This loop has something that... I'm sorry. Well, in this case, there's nothing to enter. In this case, it's self-generating, because we're doing a factorial. You enter the number n once, and you keep on going until there's... Well, that the I plus plus is what's doing it. Right? Every time you add 1 to I, eventually you still have to have a loop to get out of it. Which brings me up to what I'm going to say now. Every loop has certain features that are common to them. We, number one, need to start somewhere. That's called initialization of a loop. We need to know when to stop. That's that part of the loop. Okay? Terminating condition. We need to do something to eventually get here. Which statement makes me eventually get here to know to stop? Which of these statements makes me stop eventually? was the while statement that makes me stop. But what changes in this loop so that eventually we get here? This, right? This is what causes us eventually to get this to stop. Because each time we add one to I, eventually we got up to seven, and that stopped. So we need to have some statement, incrementation. If we don't have this incrementation statement, we'll never terminate. Well, if you look at what I've circled on the board, there's actually only one statement that's actually doing anything. This is the body of the loop. The rest of the stuff in circles, that's this statement, this statement, this statement, is like an engine that makes it go round and round and round and round. Each time it goes round, it does what's in the box. Does everyone understand how I analyze the loop? Okay? Because that's so common, and because we do loops like this so often, you want to do a loop over and over again, 20 times, 30 times, 40 times, whatever it is, a loop. Remember, in that program, the first time we're going to do the loop 5 times, the next time we're going to do the loop 3 times, the next time we're going to do the loop 2 times. So very often we have a situation where we want to do a loop a certain number of times. Okay? Because of that, we could use the while statement, just like I have here, but we have a statement that's for convenience, a much neater way of doing it. And that's called a for loop. This is a while loop. Now I'm going to use a for loop. A for loop has the following form. I'm going to rewrite this. You'll see the form. For I equals 1, I less than or equal to n, I plus plus, product equals product times I. Because up here, before even the loop, I'll start off product equals 1. But I want to focus on this. This does exactly the same thing that does, but up front, it's much easier to understand. Here's how a for loop works. When you hit a for loop, first you do number 1. You initialize. Next, you do number 2. Notice there are 3 clauses here. 1, 2, 3. Each of them separated with a semicolon. No semicolon here. So we do this, just like we did over there. Then we check to see if this is true. If this is true, then we do the body. Now, of course, the body here consists of a single statement. But what would happen if I wanted to do 10 things? I put the whole thing in braces. Remember, whenever we have one to do so. Right now, there's only one thing I want to do, so I only leave the braces in there. Okay. After doing the body, I then do this. Number 4. And after doing number 4, I go back to number 2. 2, I go to 3. And from 3, I go to 4. Because I never do number 1 again. 1 is initialization, happens one time. This is called a for loop. It's a very, very elegant and a powerful statement, although we don't really need it. We could use everything with a while loop. But it's so much neater to read, because you see up the heading, it says, for I equals 1, I equals 1. So anyone who looks at that statement right away knows, this loop is going to go around how many times? N times. Whatever N is, that's how many times the loop is going to go around. Does everyone see that? So I'm going to now take this statement and use it. Remember how the whole goal was? To take... We're working on what's in the circle, right? So I'm going to take this whole thing now, stick it in here, and our program will be done. Let's look at that program. You call that factorial? Okay, I have here my normal stuff. I wrote a function called prompt user that we've done before. Please enter a value for which you wish to calculate factorial. In order to stop, enter a negative number. Nothing new there. But let's look at the main itself. And let's look how simple the main looks there. First, I'm going to ask you for a number. Then look at the board there. Cn greater than n. While n is greater than or equal to 0, that's this loop. Inside, product equals 1. That's what's behind the board right now, behind the screen. Product equals 1. For counter equals 1, counter less than or equal to n plus plus counter, product equals product times counter. It was in counter instead of I. Print out the result. Get the next set of numbers. Come back around again. No problem. Someone see how that matches. It's quite clear what we have here. As everyone can see, we have a little loop, a baby loop, inside a big loop. Right? There's a big loop. And inside there's a little loop. It's a loop within a loop. Right? That's called a nested loop. When one loop is inside another loop, like one egg within another egg, a nested loop. We're going to have lots of those. The purpose of the outside loop is to do what? Just to get the next piece of data and tell us when it's time to stop. The purpose of the inner loop is to actually do the calculation of factorial. Does this run? I hope so. As you can see. Okay. Put in a 5. The while loop and the inside loop says 120. Prompt the user again. Put in a 3. 3 factorial is 6. Prompt the user again. Put in a 2. 2 factorial is 2. Put in a minus 1. Press the key to continue. We're done. Okay? So, let me bring this out of the way for now so you can focus on the for loop. Because that's what I want you to look at. Okay? The form of a for loop. A for loop first does this, then it does, checks to see if it's already done, then it does this, increments, checks, does. Increments, check, does. Eventually this is false, and we will fall out of the loop and continue with the rest of our program. And remember again, if there are lots of things we want to do here, then we'll put a brace here and a brace here. But if there's only one thing we're going to do, then there's no point in having those braces. It doesn't hurt, but it's ugly. Any questions? Okay, now, read about for loops. Read about if and else statements. Obviously, you don't have to read the whole chapter on the whole topic, because we will get back to it. But it's very, very important. You need to be able to use if statements to do the assignment I just gave you. We'll get back to it. Okay? And today, in the beginning of the class, we began going over the concept of arguments and parameters, a way to not have to use global variables. So global variables are now forbidden from now on. Okay, from now on, whatever we need to share between functions, we're going to use this argument parameter passing business that we just talked about. Any questions? See you next class.